Hi, this is Jennifer Nanez from Albuquerque, and you are listening to the Pro Hockey News Podcast. Enjoy!
Hello, hockey fans from around the world. I am Richard Cote, the producer of the Pro Hockey News Podcast. It is the second line edition of the podcast, and you know what that means. Actually, you might not know because you're not in on this chat with us. It means, oh, Canadian, where art thou? We are missing Jacob Doherty from Edmonton, but to make up for it, I present to you Lou Lafredo from Albuquerque. Lou, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. As I said in the just before we came on the air, without Jacob, I'm actually going to get a chance to talk.
Right, just on and on. I miss the sound of your voice, Lou. I don't get to hear it enough.
That's right. So yeah. So how are you doing?
Doing just fine here. Trying to shake a cold that's been lasting a couple of weeks, but other than that, you know, things have been going fairly well. Yeah, things are doing a-okay here in Colorado. Fans, I hate to disappoint you this week, but the My Custom Sports Chair Pro Hockey News Podcast is going to go without a rant from me this week. I've got nothing. I really tried. I even tried to take notes on a good rant this week. I remembered to write some things down, but nothing really felt right. So, you know, maybe once I pay the bills and get our roof replaced here, I'll have something to rant about. But up until then, I think we're good on that. Let's check in on a little bit of news we brought to you a couple of weeks ago, last time we were on the second line, and it had to do with the EIHL and the passing of Adam Johnson. Update in that story, police or constables, whatever they call them, police.
Yeah,
okay.
Police. Yep.
Out in England have made an arrest of a man in connection to Johnson's death. He has been charged with manslaughter. He has since been released on bond. The name of the person has not been released. So at this point, we cannot say definitively who it is. But reading between the lines, I think we can put A and B together here. Most likely it is the other player who was involved in the incident. I know, Lou, you're not exactly an expert on English law either. It just seems odd to me to have somebody who was involved in an incident like this arrested and actually charged with manslaughter when they're playing a dangerous game such as ice hockey with, you know, sharp instruments on your feet.
Yeah. You know, so the incident happened on the 28th of October, as the reports have stated, an investigation was opened and closed, within the month of November. I think it was probably within the first, 8 days or so. So this was quick, interviews, investigations, resulting in manslaughter charges. So, We did discuss this 2 weeks ago. You have to assume now that there are no presumptions of manslaughter, that there is a preponderance of evidence that would suggest manslaughter was part of the action. You know, we have reported on it. We have stayed away from naming the player involved from the Sheffield Steelers. Mm-hmm. It's just not fair, I think, all the way around until there is far more information coming from the South Yorkshire Police, EIHL, and the two teams involved. So,
and I should make a point of clarification here. The man who was arrested was charged with suspicion of manslaughter. So that is in it. Important, you know, qualifier there to put in place. He has been charged on suspicion and has been released on bail since. Right. So the South Yorkshire Police said that their investigation does continue and they will provide further updates whenever they can. We are waiting to see when those updates will be released as we continue to follow this story out of the UK. Lou, I think given the sensitive nature of this and just letting our listeners know, we are still following what's going on in the EIHL, at least, not just off the ice, but on the ice. I don't feel like going through standings this week would be appropriate. They have been returning to the ice. Teams have been returning to the ice, and there has been competition, correct?
Yes. They did take the week off following the incident. And that pause probably lasted a good 10 days after the 28th of October. And last weekend, I believe there, if I'm remembering correctly, there were nine games between Saturday and Sunday. So they were back to a full schedule last weekend and some games this week, one game this week. And then tonight was the opening of the weekend set. And so, yeah, they seem to be back on a full schedule now.
Okay. And next time we meet up, fans, if you're listening for those standing updates and news from the EIHL, we will have more for you on that. It just at this point, to me, it seems just not appropriate for us to go into that. Let's bring it back to the North American continent, and let's talk about the action going on in the minor leagues here in North America. We have the ECHL and the AHL continuing action here. In the ECHL, we'll go over quick standings in the Eastern and Western Conference. I'll give you the top four teams in each division, starting with the North Division and a team we're going to talk about here in just a second, the Trois-Vieilles Lions. Are on top in they're in the first position with 18 points. The Norfolk Admirals in the second spot with 14 points. The Newfoundland Growlers starting to claw their way back into playoff contention here with 12 points. Yes, there's plenty of season left, I am aware. And the Worcester Railers in the number four spot with 10 points. Looking at the South Division, we have the Greensville Swamp Rabbits. Still love that name. On top of the division with 18 points, the Atlanta Gladiators in the number two spot with 16 points. The Orlando Solar Bears and the Florida Everblades are in the two and three spots, respectively, both with 11 points. Going over to the Western Conference in the Central Division, I'm going to put an asterisk on this division. It's going to sound like there's not a lot of points being scored here, like being recorded here. They just haven't played a lot of games. Iowa has played the most games. They played 10. Everybody else in the league has played 12 or 13 games. So they're a little bit behind. On top of the division, we have the Toledo Walleye with 12 points. The Wheeling Nailers right behind them also with 12 points. The Fort Wayne Comets and the Iowa Heartlanders both have 10 points in the third and fourth spot, respectively. Going to the Mountain Division, oh man, a team I'm going to be keeping a close eye on this entire season is leading the Mountain Division, the Kansas City Mavericks, with 22 points. They've only lost two games this season, and it baffles me. The Iowa Steelheads in the number two spot with 18 points. The Tulsa Oilers in the number three spot with 11 points, and the Wichita Thunder in the number four spot with 9 points. All right, let's go back into the North Division. Let's talk about the Trois-Vieilles Lions. 9-1, off to a fantastic start. 10 games played, 18 points recorded. They got a 90% win percentage. Lou, how are they doing it? How are they maintaining this pressure on this division, which looks to be fairly tough?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a tough division, which have is Anthony Beauregard coming in with 9 games played so far this season. He's picked up 7 goals and 13 points on the season. And then Matthew Boucher, 8 games played so far this season, also with 7 goals and 12 points so far. So it seems a little top heavy, but the scoring seems to be somewhat balanced as you go a little bit lower. But the team is just showing off some really talented forwards here and some balanced scoring, and no one is a minus on the league on the season so far. I would talk about the goalies, but as much as the ECHL improved its its website. I don't know what is going on with the statistics in the ECHL for the goalies. I have yet to find it on their website. So I think what you have here is good balance scoring across the team. And now that I'm looking at it, I see there is only one player. There's no need to point him out. One player with a minus one on the season so far. Everyone else is playing solid defense, and perhaps two. So you've got a good defense playing up in Trois-Rivières, and the offense is clicking, I think, on all cylinders. The issue is, you know, we're going to talk about this later as well, but Montreal is still, you know, sort of iffy this season. Mm-hmm. And will they begin calling up from Laval Rocket in the AHL and then putting pressure on the Lions as the season progresses?
Well,
so in other words, can they keep up this 9-1-0 pace?
Right. I'll throw some goaltending stats at you.
Yeah, please do.
Joe Verbitek, I believe is his last name. Seven games played, six wins, one loss, 3.1 goals against average. Okay, not bad. He's got a 90.5 save percentage. He's faced 231 shots, allowing only 22 goals in. Not too shabby for, you know, facing almost 250 shots. And then you have Zachary Edmund, who has played one game. He has a 2.02 goals against average. He's got a 931 save percentage. But he's also faced 29 shots and let two in. Verbitek's taken up, you know, obviously he's their guy. He's their go-to guy. So he's going to be taking up most of the ice time. But I mean, between those two, they're getting some solid goaltending out of it. You're getting, you know, above 90% save percentage. So I'll take that. And when your offense is clicking on all cylinders, like it looks like they are with their forwards, you know, you've put yourself in a good spot.
Yeah. There are definite reasons there. The defensive core actually is not too shabby either. Miguel Tongi, three goals, seven assists for 10 points over 10 games. Mm-hmm. He's a horrible minus one.
Oh yeah, right.
Chris Ortiz. Well,
look at Chris Ortiz.
Yeah.
Oh, 7 points, 10 games, a minus three. Come on,
why,
man.
Why is he not down in the singles, in single A's? Right. As a goal and seven points through 10 games. So these guys, you know, Noah LeBron, he's a plus 11. So this guy is the one who's locking down the defense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. So they got a good thing going on there in Trois-Rivières. Yeah. So we'll keep an eye on them. Let's move over to the AHL and let's take a look at the standings in the AHL. We have, in the Atlantic Division, your top four, the Hershey Bears on top with 20 points, the Hartford Wolfpack in the number two spot with 18 points, the Charlotte Checkers in the number three spot with 16 points, the Springfield Thunderbirds in the number four spot with 15 points. In the North Division, we have the Cleveland Monsters in the number one spot with 17 points. That makes me happy. The number two spot goes to the Syracuse Crunch with 16 points. The Toronto Marlies, we're going to talk about their parent club in a minute, too, because they just got a win today as we record this on Friday, November 17th. The Toronto Marlies in the number three spot with 16 points. And the Rochester Americans in the number four spot with 16 points. Going over to the Central Division, the Texas Stars on top with 15 points. The Iowa Wild in the number two spot with 13 points. The Rockford Ice Hogs. That's my favorite AHL name, the Ice Hogs. I have a deep spot for that name. In the number three spot with 10 points, and the Grand Rapids Griffins in the number four spot with 10 points. Going to the Pacific Division, the Calgary Wranglers on top with 21 points, 10-1-1 on the season. Not too bad through 12 games. The Henderson Silver Knights in the number two spot with 18 points. The Abbotsford Canucks in the number three spot with 17 points. And the Ontario Reign rounding out your top four with 15 points. All right, we're going to keep things in the West. We're going to talk about the Pacific Division. Most specifically, we're going to talk about the hot Calgary Wranglers. As I had mentioned, they had started the season 10-1-1 through 12 games. They have 21 points. Very hot start for, a Flames affiliate. Lou, I got to ask you, at this point, we'd alluded to this earlier in the episode. At what point are we going to see the top players from Calgary start being pulled up to the Flames because of the not great start that club is having?
Well, we've already seen it. Connor Zary.
That's true. Yeah.
Was called up and has done, he's done well for himself, with the Flames. So, the Wranglers have already been picked, but you know, you have to look at the underproduction, overwhelming underproduction?
I'll allow it.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. With the Flames, you have people with huge contracts, on 10, 11, 12 game goal droughts, and that's just not going to cut it.
No.
And then when you look at what's down just across the street with the Wranglers, there is talent, I think, to be picked up, or you know, even potentially used as trade bait to attract maybe somebody who's actually going to work for the Flames.
Right. Yeah, I think they've taken probably the youngest talent from the Flames. From the Wranglers here. To go up to the Flames. And I don't know, just going through the stats, they look great. In the AHL, they look fantastic. Whether that's going to transfer to the NHL, I mean, only really the scouts have their best guesses. I would like to see Ben Jones go up. This guy, he's a point a game. Yeah, 12 games, 12 points, 3 goals, 9 assists. I feel like even at his age, he can start sparking something at the NHL level. And when I say at his age, the guy's 24. Like he's not that old, but you know, he's not like a young rookie coming in. Right. But I mean, he's had a little bit of time with the Wranglers to, you know, kind of hone his craft, to get his skates under him. You know, this is one guy I would like to see come up into the Calgary Flames, onto the bench and see what he can do at the NHL level.
Absolutely. He's, yes, he should get a look again, especially going back to how much the Flames bench is letting, the franchise down.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Absolutely.
And I always butcher his name, but Jonathan Huberdeau. Yes.
Huberdeau.
No? Yep. Gets his first goal last night in 12 games. Elias Lindholm, first goal in 11 games last night. That does not translate into, you know, them breaking out of the scoring slump and, you know, piling up points. But you've got guys down in down at the Wrangler level that I think would be chomping at the bit to get to the Flames and prove themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the Flames need. So,
yeah.
And that West is not an easy, easy conference, and that division is not easy.
No.
There's some really good teams. Abbotsford is good. The Canucks, the Vancouver Canucks AHL affiliate, Coachella is doing well. Bakersfield is still is always competitive, and the Henderson Silver Knights have been doing very well this season.
Right, and those are three teams who are not going to see much movement because of their parent clubs doing so well. You know, barring major injuries, right. We're not going to see a lot of movement between those two clubs because especially like Vegas. Vegas is firing on all cylinders. Right. Plus 24 goal differential. Let's talk about Vancouver. Identical record right now. 25 points, 2 points behind Vegas. They have a plus 31 goal differential. The three teams you'd mentioned, for Vegas, Vancouver, and for Seattle, they're AHL affiliates. There's not much to improve on in the NHL level, so they're going to have a lot of time to get that ice time in the AHL and hone that craft.
Absolutely.
So there we go. That's where we stand here in the minor leagues, in the ECHL and the AHL. Let's move on to the NHL. Kind of big news after we signed off from the first line last week, and I believe it happened on Sunday, November 12th. The Edmonton Oilers fired their head coach. I don't want to say it came as a shock, but I don't feel like it was the time to make that coaching change right after a win. I don't know, Lou. Maybe they had, this whole plan in place, and that was going to be the date no matter what. But to me, it seems kind of odd. You go, you actually start producing some offense, you win a game, and then your coach is fired the very next day, and new coach comes in, you beat the New York Islanders 4-1. Do you think the writing was on the wall going into the weekend that Ray Kraft was going to be given the axe?
I think the way the Oilers were responding on the ice, in game on the ice, was the telling tipping point. Because you had Draisaitl, and in the final loss before the win that started them on the 3-game winning streak. So 2 games before Woodcroft was fired, Connor McDavid got into a shoving match, pushing and shoving match in front of this Seattle net. And it was sort of broken up. A minor penalty was handed out to, I think, Phil DiGiuseppe. And then the play went down to the other end of the ice, and McDavid laid out a forward in the corner. And that precipitated a not bench clearing brawl, but certainly everybody on the ice was involved in the festivities. Mm-hmm. That is not something that Connor McDavid does.
Right.
In his entire career so far in the NHL, I think you can maybe count on two hands where he's gotten a little physical with somebody from the opposition. But this was ugly. This was just over the top. And I wonder if it wasn't so much the losses as much as the reaction of the players to the frustration. And that's what the coaches are supposed to control, is the frustration. And I think that was gone. They did win that game before he was let go. That it was earlier in the day, right? That they won.
Yep,
and then 4-1. He was let go, right?
Yep.
And then they beat the Kraken twice.
Right.
Including an overtime win, which they had to rally from.
Right.
They had to rally to get that. So, yes, I think the writing was on the wall, not because of the losses, but because of the emotional break or frustration break in the on the bench.
I'm gonna correct myself here. I accidentally said Raycroft instead of Woodcroft. I'll own up to that one. mental error there. I think it was the loss to the Sharks. I think that was the final nail in the coffin for Woodcroft. So going into the weekend, I think no matter what happened in that first game against Seattle, which they won 4-1, that was going to be his final game. I think the massive losing streak that they started the season with, and coming in and putting up, you know, two goals on a team who had given up, you know, 20 goals a few games, like combined a few games right. before.
Right.
It didn't really show that, you know, that's somebody you wanted to keep in leadership of the bench. So I think at that point they were like, we can't get the new guy here soon enough. You're going to have to coach one more game. So I think they went out, played Seattle, and that's when they were able to bring in a new head coach, Chris Knobloch. If you are not familiar with Chris Knobloch, maybe it's because you don't pay attention to the minor leagues. He has been a coach of the Hartford Wolfpack for quite a few years in the AHL. He did get to coach, I believe, two games for the New York Rangers back in 2021 when the coaching staff had COVID. So he got to come out and, you know, coach a couple of games for the Rangers. I think the very first game, the Rangers ended up beating the Flyers 9-0 was his first game that he coached. I can't remember the results of the second game. But I mean, there you go. There's a qualified guy to come in and lead your club. I think Edmonton took note of that, contacted him as soon as they knew they were going to need to make a coaching change. So they bring in Chris Knobloch and, they come in and they beat the New York Islanders this time, take care of the other New York team, 4-1. And they haven't looked back since. They went in and beat Seattle, like you said, having to come back, but they did end up winning in overtime 4-3. They have a game coming up on Saturday, November 18th, against the Tampa Bay Lightning, which I think would be a decent test for the new head coach. See how he's able to bounce or at least continue that winning streak, because Edmonton's on a 3-game winning streak. I never thought I'd say that at this point in the season because they just look so bad. And I wish Jacob was here so I could hear him react to all this.
Yes, absolutely.
Edmonton bashing that's going on.
You know, and it was an Evander Kane hat trick, natural hat trick. That got them the win in that overtime game. I Connor McDavid opened the scoring in that one. I don't know if you want to talk about what the potential is for Chris Knobloch.
Oh, I was actually going to toss the question out to you. Do you think at this point, the way that he's come in and motivated the team to start winning, is this a guy who's going to be sticking around for a few seasons, or is this still just a Band-Aid on a bad start to a season?
I still don't see. Well, I mean, it's hard to judge from two games,
right?
Surely, but Evander Kane waking up, so to speak, with that hat trick, is a good sign. I want to know what the team leadership thinks of the move. Mm-hmm. You really never saw anyone come out and say, well, you know, it was really too bad that, you know, Woodcroft lost his job. It's on the players. None of that ever happened. And so I wonder if Woodcroft hadn't lost, you know, that the on-ice frustration and blow-up was an issue of him having lost the locker room. And it was just a fait accompli that he would be gone, like you said. I hope for Chris Knobloch's sake that he is able to turn the team around. But I am pessimistic, not about him and his abilities as a head coach, because he has certainly done an admirable job down in the AHL with the Hartford Wolfpack. It's a mixed team. There's some very good prospects mixed in with some veteran players. Goalie tandem is a veteran plus a rookie, and that team is doing well. They're 8-3-2, I think, through the first 13 games. So he did an admirable job down in Hartford. I am still concerned about Edmonton, and have been for years. They're 5-9-2.
That's correct. 5-9-1.
They still have a lot of teams ahead of them.
Oh, they sure have, do.
You know, and that's the difficult part about hockey. There are an awful lot of 3-point games ahead of them that they have to overcome in order to make a move up the ladder.
Yeah.
But certainly they were, it was expected that they would challenge the Golden Knights for the top spot in the Pacific. And I don't know that they will.
So here's a little bit of quick math for you. In their first 13 games under Woodcroft, the Edmonton Oilers scored less than 3 goals a game. In their 2 games with Knobloch at the helm, they have scored 4 goals a game. We'll see if that continues on. He has definitely figured out something to get that offense to click. I think having a healthy Connor McDavid definitely helps, something that the Oilers didn't have at the beginning of the season. But you can't put all the blame on one piece going down. You have to be able to overcome that if you are a playoff potential team. I think this is Knobloch's job to lose. He's shown himself to be able to come in, you know, use the pieces that he has and, you know, come away with a couple of victories in his first 2 games. He's shown that he can coach at the NHL level even before that 9-0 win over Philadelphia a couple of years ago. He's proven himself in the AHL, you know, directing the Wolfpack to be able to, have the seasons that they've had under his leadership, which have been, you know, pretty great. So, to me, I don't think this is a stopgap solution. I think this is a potential, you know, future permanent head coach for the Edmonton Oilers. But, you know, it's his to lose. So we'll see how they play in the next few games.
So one thing to add before we move on, keep in mind that this is now the second head coach of the Edmonton Oilers who was picked out of the AHL.
That's correct. Who was the first?
Woodcroft.
Was it Woodcroft?
Yeah. Okay. Woodcroft was head coach for the Bakersfield Condors in the AHL.
That's right.
And he was picked out when they fired sorry, I'm getting old. But the point is, this is 2 AHL coaches in a row. I thought that Woodcroft did a terrific job the first 2 seasons he was with the Oilers. But somehow or another, he lost this team. So hopefully Knobloch, Chris Knobloch is a far more stern, rigid coach, and probably will not put up with much nonsense. You might see players being benched or slid down to the end of the bench. Mm-hmm. And the first thing he has to do is stop some of the mistakes. I mean, one of the things that Jacob has pointed out are the number of mistakes that were made, up through that 10 or 12 game stretch when, from 2 weeks ago. And so if he can stop that, then maybe he's there far more long-term than Jay Woodcroft.
All right. So I have to ask you, if you were given one question to ask Chris Knobloch, if you were writing a story and you were given one question to ask Lou, what would you ask him?
I would ask him what plans he had for shuffling lines to spread the production out. You can't have a line, you know, that line of McDavid, Draisaitl, driving all the offense. It has to be pressed down into the rest of the forwards. Obviously the top 2 lines. But can you get any scoring out of the 3rd line and use that 4th line strictly as checking and shutdown? That's what I would do. What's his plan for the offense to generate a little bit more and take the pressure off Draisaitl and McDavid, which would translate into more production from them?
All right.
That's it. Yep.
That's a very more poignant question than I would ask. I would ask him, why do you spell your name with a K? Anyways, moving on. We have... Chris with a K. I don't know. It threw me off when I was Googling him earlier today. All right. Connor Bedard,
yes.
The number 1 overall pick in the 2023 NHL draft, had a slow start to the season. He is now, he scored a few goals, it seems. He is almost a point a game this season. He is at 13 points in 14 games, 9 goals, 4 assists. That minus is getting him, that minus 7. But you know what? If he's producing, you know, offense for you, who cares what his defense is like? In his last 5 games, sorry, in his last 3 games, he's had 2 games with multi goals. He's had 2 goal games in his last 3. I've noticed something interesting here, and Lou, I want to take it back to an episode we had at the very beginning of the season talking about, you know, how can Connor Bedard be helped? Because it was when Taylor Hall went down and he was starting to have to take over more of, you know, top line responsibilities. And one of the suggestions that we all kind of agreed on was we need to limit his ice time, which seems counterintuitive, but if you go back to some of the best games he's had this season, they have all been 18 minutes or less. Minus the game against Florida, he did play almost 20 minutes in that game. 2 goals, plus 1, served a penalty, but, you know, 2 goals off of, I believe, 4 shots. Not bad, 50% shooting percentage. I'll take that. But, yeah, everything else, you know, when he's scored 1 or more goals or had a few assists, he has spent significantly less time on the ice. I think somebody over at the Chicago Blackhawks was listening to our podcast when they decided we should limit his ice time. I think that was a very good idea. Yeah. Lou, yeah. I mean, there's got to be more to it than that. But, I mean, what has been your impression since we last talked about Connor Bedard on this podcast?
Well, just that. There is a level of consistency that we're seeing from – 18-year-old, right?
Mm-hmm.
A level of consistency that belies the 18 years. And coming in as that rookie on a team that otherwise is probably not terribly competitive.
Right.
And with Taylor Hall going down, he has one less assistant on the ice. But we have, as you have correctly pointed out, we have talked about this for years now. So much pressure is put on these young players who come out as a number one pick and automatically seem to make the NHL squad because the pressure that the franchise is feeling. You don't get that number one pick unless you've had some really bad seasons.
Right.
So Bedard is the future of the Chicago Blackhawks. Managing his ice time is probably exactly the best advice that you and Jacob could have given when we spoke about this at the start of the season. And, you know, for him to be coming up with almost a point a game as an 18-year-old with a wicked, wicked wrist shot, that's what he's got. And his ability to see the ice and dish out assists is also an inherent talent that he has. But, you know, we as a profession need to be aware of the burnout. Mm-hmm. You know, this kid playing, you know, 24, 25, 28 minutes in a game is just inappropriate. I think that 19 minute cut is the best thing for him.
Yeah. I love to see it. And when I go through the stat sheet, did he play more than 18 minutes? If he did, yeah. I'm weary to look at what he was able to produce. But I've been happy to see that they've been able to limit it at about 18 minutes, you know, 18 and a half minutes, I think, would be the top. I don't want to cut it any shorter than 17 minutes. I think that is the butter zone for his best production on the ice.
Yeah, and he's leading the team in points.
He is.
Right? I mean,
he absolutely
it's the
is.
One thing we didn't, I guess we sort of maybe brushed up against it just now in this discussion, but he's leading the team in points. The closest one is after him is Corey Perry with 9 points.
Right.
And I can't imagine that Corey Perry is not the shadow.
Oh, yeah.
Protecting him, but it's pretty it's awfully telling. to have 9 goals so far this season. And right. that's, you know, the closest after him again is Corey Perry with 4.
Yeah. So, yeah, it just our, you know, I guess biweekly Connor Bedard check-in, see how the young guy is doing. Seems to be doing all right for himself in Chicago.
Yeah.
All right. Lou, I don't know if you've noticed this.
Probably not.
Right. we have a few teams who have played about 17 games. We have a few around the 16 mark. Most seem to be around the 16 mark. That's right around the 20% completion of the NHL season. I thought maybe we take a look back here at our expectations for some of these teams. And I would like for you to pick one in each conference who is overperformed and who is underperformed. We'll pick one team for overperforming in each conference and one team for underperforming in each conference. Let's start with overperformed. Who has surpassed your expectations in each conference?
Well, I guess at this point of the season, if you had asked us this 2 weeks ago, I would have had a different answer. But at this point, I'm going to take my New York Rangers as the
Are they overperforming? Well, or are they kind of where you expected them?
Well, let's see. Okay, so I'm going to go back to my original that I would have had 2 weeks ago, because as the word was coming out of my mouth, it's like, no, that's the wrong way. Detroit Red Wings are an overperforming team in the East, and that would have been the case 2 weeks ago. And unfortunately for them, they have lost 2 games over in Stockholm.
Yeah.
So you want my overperformer in the West?
Let's take the over in the West. Yeah.
Okay. The over in the West is easy. Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah.
I've had them on my list to do well for the last few seasons. And this one in particular, this season in particular, I thought that they would really start to do well, having jettisoned so much of the riff and the raff. And at 12-4-1 so far this season, they are challenging the Vegas Golden Knights for the top spot in the West. So those are my two.
All right. For me in the East, my overperformer, it's going to come to no shock as anybody, Boston, actually. I didn't think that they were going to follow up last season with the start they're having this season, which is pretty spectacular. 26 points in 15 games.
Right.
Yes, please. I thought that, you know, with the pieces they had lost in the offseason, that they were going to be somewhere middle of the road, you know, third or fourth in the division. They are, you know, easily staying on top of that division. So they're my overperformer in the East. In the West, it's very tempting to go the same as you, Lou, with the Vancouver Canucks. They have overperformed, and I am waiting for the bottom to drop out. I don't think it will. But I am just waiting for that to happen, because it has to at some point, right? I feel the same way about Boston. The bottom has to drop out somewhere.
Sure.
For me, the overperformer, and this is going to be kind of sad because they're sitting right around 500, the Arizona Coyotes, sitting in the fourth spot in the Central Division, a fairly tough division. It's gotten a little easier over the years. But the Arizona Coyotes sitting right around 500, I had them dead last in the division yet again this season. I'll get to the Blackhawks in a bit, but I'll go Arizona.
Yeah. And I had Arizona, in our preseason, windup. I said, watch out for Arizona. I thought that they would be, I think if my one A is Vancouver, my one B would be the Ducks.
Okay.
But they have not. They've started to tail off. So I don't know if that's going to hold. But I agree with you about the Coyotes. They have been competitive. And only one or two games have they been abused. Everything else has been competitive and fun to watch.
Yeah. All right. Let's. Let's get the underperformers out of the way. Let's cut them loose like you can cut with a Manscaped razor. Head over to our friends over at manscaped.com. Enter in code, I believe it's PHN15 to get 20% by going to manscaped.com/prohockeynews. I'm going to get these reads at some point. I don't know. I tried. 20% off your purchase by going to manscaped.com/prohockeynews and get yourself feeling good, looking good, maybe playing good on the ice. Who knows? I don't know if we can chalk that up to Manscaped, but you'll at least look good doing it. Exactly. All right. Let's talk about the underperformers.
Yeah.
Lou, who you got?
This is a tough call. I have four teams on my underperforming list.
Okay.
I will give you the winner and then give you the other three.
Okay.
But I thought for sure that the Buffalo Sabres would be far better than a 7-8-1 record this far into the season. They extended contracts, ballooned contracts out after last season. And those big contracts have not paid off. This team just has not performed up to what I expected them. I thought that they would challenge in the Atlantic Division. I really did. I thought that they would challenge the Boston Bruins, and they just haven't. And they have flashes of last year's success, and then they follow it up with a number of games that just don't pan out.
See, to me, this is just an earlier onset than their typical January, because January is usually when they fall off the map. They're just starting it a little early this year.
Yeah. My others are my follow-ups are Carolina Hurricanes, Tampa Bay Lightning, and I'm just going to leave it at those two.
Okay.
The other one I don't want to pick on.
Okay.
But the Carolina Hurricanes and Tampa Bay Lightning, I think, are the Lightning have a disappointment because Vasilevsky is not in goal. Right. Carolina Hurricanes are just not playing up to expectations at 9-7-0.
Right. All right. So, who you got in the West?
Who do I have in the West? The West, I'm disappointed, and I think they are underperforming the Seattle Kraken.
Okay.
I thought that they would be able to come out of the gates a little bit faster than last season, but they have not. And there's some real, I think, inconsistency in their play. The team is basically the same as last season. Dave Haxtell is still, you know, coaching them well, but they have not gotten the they've lost four games in overtime or shootout penalties. But they don't, I don't know, they're just not clicking yet. But so that's my disappointing team in the West. Tell me about yours.
Okay. My disappointing team in the East. I'm going to have to go with the New Jersey Devils. I was expecting a little bit more from them at this point in the season than where they're sitting at in fourth place. I was sure this division was going to be Rangers, Hurricanes, Devils all season long. Somehow the Capitals have crept up in there. Don't know where that came from. They went 7-2-1 in their last 10. That definitely helps. But the Devils playing 500 in their last 10. They're only 1 point out of second place, but you know, I feel this team with what they showed last season, they should be higher than fourth place right now, but that's just kind of how their season's been panning out. Just a hair over 500. Yeah. That's been my disappointment in the East. My disappointment in the West, beyond the obvious Colorado Avalanche, I thought that they were going to be just dominating the division, but there they are in second place. But you know, you don't need to win the division to win the Stanley Cup. You don't need to do that. My disappointment in the West, beyond Seattle, It's the two teams from Alberta. The Flames and the Oilers, I think, are extremely underperforming. I know we just talked about how Edmonton's starting to turn it around. Calgary has won their last two, but they're still 4-5-1 in their last 10. There's still a couple of, they're like, what? Quick math here. 7 points out of third place. They're hardly fighting for a wild card at this point. I don't know. Just the two teams from Alberta have been my underperformers of the season. I think you could ask any fan, whether it be a Flames or an Oilers fan in Alberta, they will tell you the same thing. Biggest disappointment in the league so far this season.
Yeah, I agree with you. I expected obviously more from Edmonton. I know Jacob did. The Flames, you know, when they broke up broke out after the season was over, there was mm-hmm. an awful lot of discontent, and I don't know that it has settled down yet.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's the problem there.
And a quick callback to your Seattle Kraken mention.
Yes.
They are sitting at a minus 18 goal differential on the season, so they're not getting a whole lot of supporting offense. They're also not really keeping the puck out of the net. That is the second worst goal differential in the league, only to be topped by the San Jose Sharks at minus 47. So just to put it in a little bit of perspective there, I think you hit it on the head. Seattle has definitely been underperforming given the season they had last year.
Which also begs the question, what is going to happen with Philip Grubauer? Because he has great games and then mm-hmm. dreadful games.
Sure does.
Wow. And you should know that better than anyone else when he was there in Denver. So
Yeah. No, okay. Watch him make the spectacular saves. And then when it came to the routine ground balls right between the legs, Bill Buckner style.
I was going to say the same thing. We've been hanging out too long, Richard. Way too long. The Buckner.
All right. Let's get going to the Bet 99 PHN picks of the week. I'll give a little recap over last week. Lou, you won week two at 3-2. Congratulations.
Wow.
I'm not going to talk about me, and then we're going to talk about Jacob, who went 2-3. Suffice to say, we're all tied at 5-5 on the season.
Ooh, no. Yeah. Oh, Richard.
I mismathed here. I mismathed. I'm still leading because I had I thought I had a 4-1 to start the season. I am 6-4.
6-4.
Okay. 6-4. So I'm still leading.
Okay.
But it got a lot closer after last week. I went 1-4 last week.
Okay.
Oh, let's see if I can redeem myself here.
Okay.
Week three, coming at you November 18th. We have 5 games to pick. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can find us at PHN Podcast, and you can use the hashtag PHN Picks to submit your picks to us. Game number one, Lou, Chicago at Nashville. I'm trying to branch out and just not pick the same teams all
right,
the time.
Right.
Who do you got in this one?
Oh,
it's a barn burner.
But see, these are the games where you have to really think about it.
Right.
And so I am going to go with Chicago because I think Nashville is a hot mess right now.
Yeah. A Nashville hot mess.
Yeah.
I agree. Chicago's going to win this one. Connor Bedard's going to get his first career hat trick, and he's going to have 17 minutes of ice time. Game number two, the Edmonton Oilers at the Tampa Bay Lightning. We just talked about Edmonton trying to keep the good times rolling. Lou, do they keep the good times rolling?
No, I think this one goes to Tampa. Because John Cooper, the head coach, is probably not happy with the way his team is playing right now. And I think back on home ice, they get a chance to turn it around. And so I'll take Tampa.
All right. I'm going to go Edmonton. because I want to see this streak continue for the new head coach. Also, I want to mix things up, so I'm going to Edmonton.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Game number three. Lou, your New York Rangers at the New Jersey Devils.
You had to do this.
Yeah, and I'm going to fill it in
for
you.
Yeah, I have to take I have to take the Rangers, and I just like the way Peter Laviolette is coaching this team.
Yeah,
he has made some changes. Phil Hedel went down. It's rumored to be a concussion a few games ago, and the move that Laviolette made was to shift Trocheck to the center on the second line. And all it's done is woken up Alexi Lafreniere, who's now not on fire, but I mean, he is now producing. He's got 7 goals so far this season. It took him until February 7th of last season to get 7 goals, and he's already got 7 now. So that having Trocheck in the middle and Panarin on the right has given Lafreniere ample opportunity to strut his stuff. So,
all right. Rangers. All right, I'm going to go Rangers too. New Jersey is not giving me anything to be excited about this season, but, you know, good metropolitan matchup there.
Yeah.
Game number four, the Arizona Coyotes at the Winnipeg Jets. I don't think we're going to know who's playing where because we're going to see about 5,000 fans at either stadium. Lou, who you got?
Well, 5,000 in one place is a sellout.
Right.
Here's another tough one. Winnipeg is playing well. Arizona, I'm going to take the Coyotes on the road, the once in future, franchises.
All right. Wow. These two teams are very evenly matched.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to go Winnipeg.
Okay.
Something tells me that home ice is going to be nice to them, even if they can't hear their fans who aren't there. All right, last game, Seattle Kraken at the Vancouver Canucks. Lou, can I just put you down for Vancouver? Are you on the Canucks bandwagon?
You know, they just lost 5-2 to the Calgary Flames. Yes, yeah, I'll stay on the wagon. I'll take the Canucks.
They're undefeated in regulation at home.
Wow. Okay. That's wow.
You know, I think something has to light a fire underneath the Kraken right now, and I think this is going to be the game to do it. So I'm going to go with Seattle in this game. Although, I mean, on the road, 3-3-4. Yeah. They'll do it. They'll pull one out. All right, there are our picks for the week, our PHN picks of the week. If you want to follow us again on Twitter, you can find us at Pro Hockey News. That's where you can find the website. Yeah. Please follow Pro Hockey News. Or you can find the podcast at PHN Podcast. And you can use the hashtag PHN Picks to submit your picks. And I'm going to turn it over to Lou for his parting thoughts before I start continue to make an idiot out of myself.
Yeah. So listen, for those who follow us online, we are going through a facelift and a major redesign. And that major redesign has impacted our WordPress backbone, which is that's what the site is built on. But we are not as rapidly as I would like. but David Luft, our IT, he owns the IT company that supports Pro Hockey News. We are coming to the redesign and should be released. We're hoping in the next couple of weeks. So be on the lookout. Right. It's sweet. I mean, it's a really nice, redesign.
We'll be on the lookout for that. My parting thought this week, do I really have one? I don't know. Just, not much on my mind this week, just busy, you know, looking up and down the standings, following the good old game of hockey, because I just, I enjoy it so much, and I'm just so happy to be part of this community. That's really all I got. You know, got a good spot in the league, get to continue to play. That's really all anybody can ask for.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you, listeners, for listening to this edition of the Pro Hockey News Podcast. Thanks to all of our sponsors, My Custom Sports Chair, Chicago Wolves Merchandise Store, Manscaped and LDE Affinity Jewelry. And especially thank you to the listeners. You have made us a part of your routine, and we truly and gratefully thank you for that. For Lou Lafredo and the absent Jacob Doherty, I am Richard Cote, and I will see everybody next week.